Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome into Game Day, Who Dat? Steve Geller, Charlie Long, and also Coleman hanging out with you here on First Take. Caesars Sportsbook, First Take, that is, an official sports betting partner of the Saints. Black and gold week three action in Seattle. Gentlemen, Charlie, how you feeling today?
I'm looking forward to it, man. It's been a weird kind of tour of the NFC West so far for the black and gold, hasn't it? Like where you start off the year with Arizona and then you host the 49ers. Now you're going to Seattle to play the Seahawks.
Getting them out the way early.
Yeah. I mean, the NFC West is off to a great start this year, but it's also maybe because they're playing the NFC South. Like I know the Cardinals beat up on the Panthers and the Rams are off to a 2-0 start. All these 2-0 teams in this division. And then the Seahawks sitting in fourth place at 1-1, Steve. So they're looking for a big win today, but so are the Saints looking to get out of that 0-2 hole.
Felt odd coming to the studio today. Honestly, it has been a while since I've been in here for the pregame show because preseason action, we had, what was it, the last two games in the Dome and then the first two games of the regular season. So it's been a good month.
Steve, it's been a full month since I've done this show. Like, we did the very first preseason game, like, oh, great, football's back. And then, you know, the next 2 weeks we're at home for the preseason and the first 2 weeks of the regular season we're at home. So I've taken a good month off of doing this show with you. So it's good to be back.
Looking at the injury update from the game status of guys going into this matchup, week three, Saints-Seattle, we know there are two out for this contest for the black and gold and four questionable. The two out, Dylan Raidins, offensive lineman, and also defensive end Chase Young, also out this game. Man, oh man, that's one of the more disappointing outcomes from training camp for me, Charlie, is not having Chase Young in action. We all raved about what he looked like, what he sounded like, felt he was much more comfortable with his team, with his players around him, and even with the scheme with Brandon Staley. I know the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, expecting big things for Chase Young this season, and well, now it's a third straight game. We're not seeing him in action at all.
Chase has dealt with injuries throughout his career.
Oh, I've got a buddy back home in Jersey that's a Commanders fan. He's like, I told you.
Dating all the way back to his time with Washington. But, you know, when it cropped up with this injury late in kind of the process, it sounded like it wasn't going to be too bad and that Chase was very optimistic about getting himself back on the field. But being out for a third straight week, you know, I think we expected it to maybe be the first week, maybe the second week, but the third week as well is a little bit disappointing, especially because, Steve, we'll get into the breakdown of this matchup against the Seahawks. This is a huge game, and I mean a huge game for the Saints defensive front.
We got trench warfare to keep an eye on big time this one.
And as we were talking about, you know, the injury report and what the Seahawks are going to be dealing with, they're going to be without Zach Charbonnet, their RB2. And it's kind of almost a split backfield in Seattle where you have Kenneth Walker maybe as their RB1, but Charbonnet is basically their RB1A or 1B. I mean, so you have that kind of two-headed monster in the backfield, and without him available, he's doubtful for the game. But I think when we were talking with Jim Mueller, the Seahawks sideline reporter on Friday, any time that Seattle's listed a player as doubtful so far this year, they haven't played. So we'll see if that trend continues. He's not completely listed as out just yet, but he's likely going to be out. Sam Darnold relies on play action a lot, so if you can run the football, if you're Seattle, he's going to be better. At the same time, if you can get pressure on him in true dropback sets, like you're going to have success against Darnold and that Seahawks offense. But to be able to do that, you got to stop the run. Once again, Charbonnet is not going to be playing. It's going to be Kenneth Walker receiving a majority of that load at the running back position. If you can slow him down and also get pressure on Darnold in those true dropback sets and third and long situations, that's going to be a huge key for this game. But the Saints defensive front hasn't been great at that so far this year. It's been Carl Granderson. I know Cam Jordan had the really good week one. But really, without Chase Young available, this is kind of circling all the way back to my point, is that the Saints' defensive front has not been very good at getting pressure so far this year. That's going to have to change today.
Yeah, you mentioned with Zach Charbonnet for Seattle, doubtful. They got three others, Nick Emmanuel, safety, another safety, and Julian Love, and corner Devin Witherspoon, doubtful. So they are hurting big time in the secondary.
Deuce and I talked about this on Friday. Maybe not as many people know about Devon Witherspoon,
but he's awesome. Yeah.
I mean, a former top five pick, and he has really lived up to that draft billing.
One of our guests this week said a Seattle Seahawks analyst basically calling him the heart and soul of that squad, and maybe the entire team.
He plays like nickel because it's a 3-4 defense, and so he'll play nickel from time to time. He's a fantastic cornerback. But, you know, they're without him, or they're likely going to be without him, and two safeties with Julian Love and Nick Emmanuel. Kind of on the inverse, like we were just saying, if the Saints' defensive front can win this battle against the Seahawks' young offensive line, get pressure on Darnold, stop the run, you're going to be looking good there. The opposite side, if the Saints' offensive line can hold up against a ferocious Seattle defensive front, there's going to be guys in the backfield that Spencer Rattler and that Saints' offense can pick on. But he's got to have time to throw.
Right.
So that's obviously a key as well.
More from the injury front here. We'll wrap it up with the questionables now for the Saints. Taliese Fuaga, definitely a big concern there. Knee and back issue for him. Didn't practice all week. Still, though, questionable for this matchup. I'm sure he's trying to go out there on pregame warm-up, see how he's feeling. Trevor Penning, we mentioned, was limited in practice all week, recovering from that toe issue. He is questionable. Trey Palmer, wide receiver, was limited on Wednesday, didn't practice Thursday and Friday. He is questionable in the matchup. And then wide receiver Devon Valet kind of appeared late in the week with an injury, dealing with a hip issue, limited on Thursday, limited on Friday, so is questionable for today.
Right.
I was hoping to see that continued development for him. So I'm hoping Valet can play just because we saw him at least in game one. He had a catch for a key first down, great. And then last game, he only had one catch, but it was for a touchdown. So baby steps there. You saw his more involvement in this offense, and obviously more weapons for Spencer Rattler, the better.
Yeah, and you hated to see him kind of crop up on the injury report because you thought everything was going to be good there. But, Steve, we'll see if he ends up playing. The questionables, that offensive line, if Trevor Penning can play, then he'll make his debut at left guard.
You're hoping so with Raiden's down.
Raiden's
was filling him for him.
Correct. So your backup is already out. He didn't even take the trip with the team to Seattle from what I had kind of read.
It was odd for me. I don't recall the last time that I saw an injury report come on Thursday and already list somebody out.
Yeah, he was completely out.
Right.
So Raiden's, who has been filling in for Penning, is out. So if Penning can't go, I mean, what do you really have there? Is it going to be Torricelli Simpkins making his NFL regular season debut at left guard? That might be what you see. So, but hopefully it will be Penning making his Saints debut at left guard in the regular season. And then at right tackle, Fuanga, like, he hasn't really looked right early on in the season, and it's obviously due to injury. It's not due to talent or any kind of, I guess, play on the field, because Fuanga's, he showed how good he can be last year.
And then you got to worry if that knee issue he was dealing with also ended up causing the back issues as he's compensating for the knee.
Yeah, and you saw that he kind of got scorched on the final play that Rattler got sacked on. So, I mean, you want him to be healthy for the stretch run, but obviously this is a big game for the Saints as well, so we'll see if he ends up going. If he doesn't, it's going to probably be Awesome Richards, the player that they traded with the Cowboys for earlier in the offseason. He kind of got some reps at right tackle as well. And I remember Jeff Nowak, our Saints Island reporter, had an interview with Awesome, and he said that that was the first time that he had ever played right tackle. And he looked pretty good, right? So he's going to be maybe the Saints' new swing tackle, where he'll play left tackle, he'll play right tackle, wherever really he needs to fill in, basically. So, if Tally can't go, which, you know, we'll see, he's questionable, you can expect Awesome Richards to kind of fill in that spot.
The Saints did make some roster moves heading into this game. Not a good sign for me for Valet, when you see the fact that they've activated Kevin Austin Jr. from the practice squad for this matchup. They also elevated tight end Trayton Welch and defensive end Fidel Diggs, and have waived tight end seventh-round pick Maliki Mataveo.
Right. So we'll end up seeing what happens there. Welch flashed throughout the preseason. Juwan has been off to a really hot start as far as his production numbers.
I'm hoping that continues. I got him in fantasy.
The targets. I mean, if you're talking about target share for a tight end, he's up there in the entire NFL. So Rattler's been looking for him. I mean, he's got to work on some of the drop issues. Like, obviously, week one, the potential touchdown catch was a tough catch. But early in the week two, he had some really, really rough drops.
Yeah.
he knows he needs to fix that. But just the amount of targets that he's been seeing early on, he's clearly a huge part of this offense. So hopefully he'll keep it going. And then also Trayton Welch being elevated for that tight end two spot as well. So, you know, the Saints, once again, with this Seahawks defensive backfield kind of banged up, not even kind of, really banged up entering this matchup, if that potentially new-look offensive line can hold up and give Rattler some time to get the ball out, you could see some good passing numbers for Rattler in this game, which you've seen through the first 2 weeks as well. But there's some exploitable faces on that defensive backfield for Seattle if Rattler has time to utilize his weapons in the passing attack.
Yeah, I'll say for me with Rattler, game one against Arizona was kind of, I thought, what we would expect from him this season. And then game two against the Niners, I was really impressed with his outing. Obviously, a 3-touchdown day. Nothing to bat your eye out there.
Maybe his best performance as a pro.
No doubt.
And so, I mean, I think it was his first multi-touchdown performance as a pro, and he had three.
Right.
Against, by the way, a 49ers defense that wasn't really the banged-up side of the ball. The 49ers were injured on offense with, you know, Purdy and Kittle down and all that good stuff. He went up against a lot of the top players on the 49ers defense, like the Nick Bosas and the Fred Warners of the world, and still stood up and had a really strong day. So you're hoping that when he goes up against the Seahawks defense, he'll be able to build on that showing. But at the same time, Steve, we'll talk about it a little bit more. Seattle's defensive line is pretty, pretty nasty.
For sure. You want to sound off here on First Take. Me and Charlie, also Coleman, hanging out with you till 1 o'clock. That's when the Bud Light countdown, the kickoff with the Cajun Cannon comes on. And after that, kickoff with Mike Hawes, Deuce McAllister, Jeff Nowak on the sideline. That is 3:05 today in Seattle. Definitely noise is going to be an issue out there. A lot of folks have talked about it. But the best way to quiet a home crowd, put some points on the board early on and take them out of it. So hopefully the Saints can get off to that fast start. We'll hear a bunch of cuts from Deuce McAllister, Drew Brees, Spencer Rattler, Eric McCoy, head coach Kellen Moore, and even more. Keep it locked here on First Take. You can sound off 504-260-1870. Tell us what you're up to this game day, folks. Coming back with more of First Take after the break here on
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And
yeah.
You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
BWL.
Rattler has it. Here comes some pressure. Throwing to the end zone. Looking for Juwan Johnson, who makes the catch. And that's a touchdown.
Black and gold getting a touchdown there. Spencer Rattler, one of his three TD passes against the 49ers last week. It ended up in a 26-21 loss, but definitely an impressive outing from the second-year QB. And I think that we're hoping that growth can continue into this Sunday. But man, oh man, we know it's going to be a tough all-around test against a Seattle squad that's a tough defensive front that's going to challenge this O-line as well as just really hostile territory. You know, you hear the Superdome being one of the loudest venues throughout the NFL. Seattle's right up there, too, with their 12th man being notable.
I'll give credit once again to Jen Mueller, who brought this up to my attention.
Okay.
When we were interviewing the Seattle's sideline reporter on Friday, Seattle hasn't been good at home. Recently, at least.
Yeah.
Dating back to last year under head coach Mike McDonald, I know that they got hot at the end of last season where they basically won seven of their final nine games, I believe, or six of their final eight games. They kind of, after the bye week, McDonald really got them going late in the season. And that's kind of bled into this year, specifically the defense. The defense was excellent at points late last season, and it's been really good early on this year as well. But a lot of those wins, they've been road warriors. From what I'm looking at here, Steve, last season, 2024, to this season, the Seahawks have only had one home game this year, and they lost it to the 49ers in week one.
Yeah.
But last year, basically five of their final six games at home, they lost.
Wow.
Like, if you're talking about when they got hot, they beat San Francisco on the road, they beat Arizona at home. That was the one home win that they've had, basically, you know, in the past seven home games that they've had. They go to the Jets, they win at the Jets, they win at Arizona. Then back-to-back home games, they lose to Green Bay and Minnesota last year, and then they wrap up the year with two wins at Chicago and at Los Angeles. So they've been kind of road warriors under Coach McDonald. They haven't been as good at home, which, I mean, the Saints have also have a historic home field advantage that they've seemed to have lost in recent years as well. They're looking to recapture. But that was something interesting that I had noticed. Now, granted, a lot of these teams that they've lost to at home were very, very good teams. Like, they lose to Buffalo and the Rams. They lost at home to Green Bay and Minnesota, as I just mentioned, and then week one to San Francisco. So it's not like they're playing like four teams at home. But at the same time, it's been an interesting thing that Jen had kind of pointed out there.
Right, because you think of Seattle as one of those spots.
Man.
Oh, man, so right, so unbeatable at home.
Like the flag flying for the 12th man, and everyone's all excited and loud. And Drew Brees, who had come on with us earlier in the week, had said it was one of the toughest environments he's ever had to play in.
Right.
Because he had pointed out specifically the year that they won the Super Bowl in 2013, where they went twice. And he was just like, it was ridiculous. Like, you can't hear anything. So it's really interesting to me that despite, you know, that home field advantage that's been historic, they really haven't had success at home in basically the last seven games that they've played.
So you're saying they're ripe for the picking?
Well, once again, I mean, it's just like they're 0-1 at home this year. And then dating back to last season, like, the last seven home games they've played, they've lost six of them. So I think that's kind of an interesting trend to follow.
You mentioned Drew Brees, who we had on this week, talking about all things black and gold. We got to talk to him a little bit, obviously, about this Saints squad under head coach Kellen Moore. And how does he think the team's responding to their new head coach?
That was the first question I asked all the players, you know, all the guys that I played with. Hey, how you like Kellen? You know, what's the structure like? This and like, to a man, they all love him. They love the way this offseason went, how training camp went. They felt like it was the proper mix of, hey, we're working hard, but we're taking care of you guys, right? Like, just the way that they structured a lot of the meeting times and practice times and just the way that they've, you valued recovery. Right. And so you talk to guys like DeMario Davis, Cam Jordan, and others. And they love playing for this guy. So that tells me a lot, you know. Those guys, they love the culture that's being implemented. And they've been right there. You know, if they could have made one or two plays in each of these games and come up with a victory, we're sitting here at 2-0 and having a much different conversation. But bottom line is just about, you know, what, 70-80% of these games come down to the final possession.
Yes.
So it's just developing that winning culture, that winning belief. You know, whether it's offense or defense, you're going to find a way to win. And you just got to get the first one and break the seal.
Breaking that seal will be nice today in Seattle. A 3:05 kickoff here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. One of the things that's been a bugaboo for this Saints squad too through the first two games is just getting off to those slow starts, not being able to put on points early on in games. And Brees talked about why a fast start is vital for that Seattle crowd.
That's the number one way that you combat a rowdy environment is you try to shut them up really quick with going down and getting a first possession score and getting somewhat of a lead. That's the best way.
Yeah, you know, for me, Charlie, my only time I got to visit Seattle when I was on the sideline was the year that Drew Brees, in the game before, hurts his thumb against the Rams. So we're in Seattle for the week, and I got that Teddy Bridgewater start in that game, which I ended up pulling out the win.
Was that 2019?
2019, yes.
Yeah, I remember that.
And what's funny is I got pulled off the sideline because our extraordinaire engineer, Robert Carroll, ended up dealing with a sickness, so I had to run the board for that game.
Whoa.
Oh, that was, and I thought at first everybody's pranking me. I'm like, oh, I get it. I'm the new guy on the sideline. This is like a joke. I got a text at 5 in the morning. We're going to need to pull you off the sideline. Robert's sick. And I was like, yeah, sure, right, whatever.
And it was legit. That's
it was
crazy.
Legit.
That's funny. Steve, you know, one other thing about, you know, Kellen Moore, going back to that, there was a point that Mark Schlereth, who we talk to every Tuesday, had brought up that, you know, the way this team is fighting when everybody thought the Saints team was going to be the worst team in the NFL.
Yeah.
Look at any different power rating. There are always 32.
Bottom,
but the way
right.
that they've been fighting, the way that they've been battling early on in the season is a testament to Coach Moore and his staff, that they've got these guys really battling despite, you know, what the national media disrespected them earlier in the offseason. And they're obviously not the worst team in the NFL, like a lot of people thought, despite their 0-2 record. So one other thing, though, is that, you know, Kellen Moore and Mike McDonald. Kellen kind of snatched his chain a little bit as far as being the youngest head coach in the NFL.
For sure.
Mike McDonald was the youngest head coach in the NFL last year, and then Kellen kind of supplanted him this offseason as well. So when he got the Saints job, two great young minds, but obviously different sides of the ball. McDonald's a brilliant defensive mind. Kellen's a brilliant offensive mind.
More from Drew Brees talking with us here on WWL. One of the few players that he did get to play with on this Saints offense, tight end Juwan Johnson, who you mentioned has been targeted early and often, seems to be a favorite target of Spencer Rattler. Unfortunately, didn't come up with a grab in game one. Tough catch, though, from that Arizona defense closing in on him, causing the ball to pop out late. But then in game two, you saw some drops early on that kind of dismayed you. And what could have been some early points on the board against a San Fran squad that could have set the tempo. But Drew Brees talked about what maturation he's seen from Juwan Johnson.
You know what? Juwan Johnson came and worked out with me in 2020, COVID year, when he was coming out of college. We had taken him as an undrafted free agent, and he was a receiver in college. If you remember, he went to Penn State and then transferred to Oregon for a year. And he was really coming in as one of these kind of big hybrid receivers. Is he going to play tight end? You weren't sure. You know, he's obviously, 6'5", I think 220 at the time. But he was one of those like, hey, we could probably bulk this guy up. But when we trained together, it was all receiver for a week. And going into camp, though, I felt like, man, this guy's unique, obviously, just because of his size, that, man, he could convert and be – look, there was no better offense with Sean to turn guys into these hybrid weapons, right? The Jimmy Grahams, the Taysom Hills, and others, right? I've been proud of his development because here was a guy who, hey, you want to play in this league and play for a long time, put on weight. You're going to have to block, you know, as a tight end, but that's going to open up opportunities for you as a receiving tight end as well. And look, he's made some plays for us here over the last few years and has the opportunity to be a real feature guy, especially if our speed on the outside can threaten people. That's going to give him really favorable matchups inside. And when you're a 6'5" target, there's nobody in the interior that can cover you. You know, like there's a place where you can throw the ball as a quarterback where your guy can get it and nobody else can. So it's that feel of the zone, you know, holes and where the back shoulder is going to be thrown on the field and just all those little nuances that just require time between QB and tight end, and yet can have, you know, massively good effects on just how dynamic the offense can be with a guy like that.
Saints big target there, and Juwan Johnson, you heard Drew Brees talking about, and that's why, Charlie, I have him slotted now in my fantasy lineup today. Tucker Kraft for the Green Bay Packers a bit banged up, so I'm not trusting him. Going with the more healthy Juwan Johnson in this matchup. Plus, like we ran through in the first segment, that secondary, especially at safety, is awfully dinged up.
You know, this is a complete side note. I am going to be starting Tucker Kraft, and I feel kind of nervous about it. Like, I was back and forth because I also have Njoku, and I'm like,
yeah,
obviously no one cares about fantasy, so we'll move off from that. Juwan Johnson so far, you know, last year you could probably call his quote-unquote breakout season. It was career highs in receptions, career highs in targets, and receiving yards. It wasn't his career high in touchdowns because he had that back in 2022. But through two games, and I get it's a two-game sample size, 13 receptions on 20 targets so far this year.
He's getting the targets, just got to bring more in.
6.5 receptions per game, though, Steve. If you stretch that out over a 17-game season, you realize how many that is?
Right.
It's like 110 receptions. Granted, once again, two games, small sample size. 125 receiving yards. Stretch that over a 17-game season from, you know, it's basically 65 receiving yards per game. You're looking at close to a 1,000-yard season over a 17-game stretch. That's the type of pace that he's on right now.
That's what he's getting paid for.
Well, yes. No, actually, yes.
Like, I know. That's what him, the fans will say, though.
They paid him to be this type of receiver for the Saints offense. So, obviously, the drops have been a little bit of an issue early on, but the targets are really outrageous, considering last year in his, once again, quote-unquote breakout year where he had career highs in receptions, targets, and receiving yards, he finished in 17 games with 66 targets. He's already got 20-2. Like, Rattler is going to him early and often in games.
Security blanket.
Obviously, you want to see him reel in the easy passes that right. He's dropped and maybe reel in some of those real tough catches as well. But Juwan Johnson early on this year has really made a name for himself. And that's why a lot of, going back to fantasy, a lot of fantasy people are hopping on the hype train because the production has been there early on this season as far as target share, as far as receptions, as far as yardage. Now, you know, you need to just kind of stay consistent throughout the season. That's been really the question about Juwan.
We had a future Hall of Famer, soon to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, Drew Brees, with us on Wednesday. He'll be joining us again on Wednesday with QB to QB with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. Obviously, we want his take on the quarterback position. Spencer Rattler in this offense, what's Drew Brees think so far?
I think Spencer is a really dynamic player. Like, stature-wise, he's a lot like me from the perspective of you're not the tallest guy, but you're athletic, you can move. Man, I love the way he throws the ball. He's made some plays running the football that have been really impressive over the last couple of weeks, you know, getting some key first downs, breaking tackles. I mean, just some gutsy performances. You know, I know it hasn't resulted in wins, but we've been right there. I mean, honestly, I look at us and the Tampa Bay Bucks. Tampa Bay Bucks just found a way to win those two games, and unfortunately we didn't, but we're, you know, otherwise I think the division still is just wide open for the taking. So, look, I've loved to watch his development. I think he's a great fit for Kellen Moore's offense. I really like the stuff that we're doing offensively. God, we got some weapons. I was at the game a Sunday, and I'm looking out there at kind of the speed and versatility we have with the guys, on the perimeter, and then obviously Kamara and Juwan Johnson, and so it's fun to watch.
You know, Drew talked about there, Charlie, the fact that obviously things are winless right now for this team, 0-2, but they've looked like they've showed improvement in the first two games. And unfortunately, there's that stigma now, I feel like, around quarterback Spencer Rattler. You can say as much good as you want about the guy, but someone's going to throw in your face, oh, but he's 0-8 as a starting quarterback. And we asked quarterback Drew Brees, Saints legend, about that stigma.
I think we all need to, you know, be patient with the process here. You know, here's a guy who was a mid-round pick last year as a rookie and was forced to come in and play, you know, 4 or 5 games due to injury, and not just injury to Derek Carr, but also across the board. I mean, we didn't have our 2 starting receivers. We didn't have a couple of linemen up front. And so, man, you talk about being thrown in the fire, right? And obviously things are different this year. We've been able to, you know, get guys healthy, you know, receivers on the perimeter healthy. You add some pieces of the puzzle. You go out and get Cooks. You trade for Vile. You got, I think, you made some solid draft picks to continue to build that O-line as well. And they're right there. I mean, literally right on the cusp. Even last year, a couple of games where they're just right there. They just had to find a way to break the seal, get that first win, start developing some confidence and momentum. But when I watch Spencer play, he's got all the traits. You know, he's got some moxie. He plays with some swagger, kind of chip on his shoulder. The guys seem to like him and play hard around him and for him. He can make all the throws. Man, he can make plays with his legs. He's not afraid to take off and run and kind of lower his head to go get the first down. So for all those reasons, I think we got, you know, we have to be patient with him and recognize that, man, it's going to happen, and hopefully it happens soon.
Hopefully it happens soon. He talked about breaking that seal. We were close in those first two games, and it'd be interesting to see, can this team pull it off on the road this week? An impressive victory in Seattle. We know it's a long road trip for the squad. We've talked about the noise in the stadium, and we know that defensive front is going to pose a ton of problems against an offensive line that's been weak.
I feel so bad for Rattler with that record just hanging over his head, because it's clearly not his fault that they lost those first two games.
Right, but it is what it is.
And it's there, right? Yeah. But you've seen the steps that he's made from last year to this year, and they've been extraordinarily encouraging. For one of the biggest knocks on the guy was his turnover issues last season and as a rookie. And this year, he's been protecting the ball. That's been, like, number one thing. He's not putting the ball in harm's way.
He still has a problem, though, carrying the ball and, like, scrambling around and getting it knocked out.
And you have to have some better security as a rusher, but as a passer is what I'm saying.
Like, no, for sure.
And he's had 80
better
passing
decision
attempts.
Making.
80 passing attempts this year. I would need to double check like the PFF numbers on that, because they have like the turnover worthy plays thing as far as quarterbacks go.
We know that one in the first one got saved by a flag, which would have been an interception for him against Arizona.
But still, 0 interceptions early on in the season.
It is what it is.
Fantastic the first 2 weeks. And Deuce had brought this up on Friday when he and I were co-hosting the Fins and the Pro Show with Mike in Seattle, that the amount of passing attempts for him, right? Week 1, it was way too much against Arizona, where he threw 46 times. that is not what you want to see from Spencer Rattler.
From any QB, really.
Yeah, that's fair as well. But Deuce had said the kind of sweet spot for Rattler is anywhere from 30 to 35 passing attempts, where you're having more of a balanced offense. And that's what you saw in week two against San Francisco, where you still had, you know, about 30 rushing attempts, and Rattler threw the ball 34 times. That's a balanced offense. That is exactly what you want to see. And you're not putting too much of the pressure on Spencer Rattler to be a superhero, because you're just kind of letting him manage the game. But as Drew said, like earlier on in that bite, that you have to get off to a good start, because if you find yourself in a 10-point hole in the first half and you have to get Rattler to throw, you know, close to 40 plus times to get back into the game, that's not a winning formula, especially against, you know, a Seattle defensive front that can absolutely get after the passer.
And trying to climb out that hole when the crowd has that energy behind them as well. They're into the game. They're making the stops on defense.
Right.
They're up by double digits, and suddenly the communication becomes even more difficult. And we've seen pre-snap issues in early on with this team. Game two was better than game one, but there's still penalty issues.
And potentially a couple new faces, at least one new face, we know for sure, because right ends isn't going to be playing, and we're expecting maybe Penning to be that left guard and slot in.
Be.
He's questionable, so we don't know 100%, but you know, we're hopeful that he will be the guy. So there's going to be a new front five. There's going to be at least one new face. We'll see if there's two if Fuanga can't go today.
Right.
But there's going to be at least one new face on that Saints offensive front. So, yeah, that's going to be a big deal for them. And Drew kind of highlighted that playing in Seattle, you have to have elite communication, because you're just not going to be able to hear anything.
You can sound off on our First Take pregame show here at WWL 504-260-1870. Taking the break. We'll be back with even more after this on WWL Saints Radio.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back here on the WWL Caesars Sportsbook First Take, an official sports betting partner of the Saints. Reminding everybody, Venture Global is donating $10 per Saints receiving yards to their Catch for the Coast program all season long. Venture Global, innovating to provide low-cost LNG to the world. Their current donations after 2 weeks, $4,210. Thank you, Venture Global, there. Back here on First Take as we get ready for a 3:05 start for the Black and Gold. And yeah, a lot different than waking up for that 8 a.m. pregame show today, Charlie.
Yeah, I could get used to these afternoon start times, because, you know, in a couple of minutes here, Steve, we're going to have the noon slate starting up. So we'll be able to kind of provide some score updates as they come available in the 12 o'clock hour. And then obviously once we get to, you know, the countdown to kickoff, it becomes a little bit more different. But as far as the First Take show goes, I mean, the noon slate today is pretty cool. So we'll be sharing updates as they become available.
Yeah, you mentioned that noon slate. There's all of the other teams in the NFC South are in action early on. So those games will be wrapping up by the time the Saints are getting ready to kick off. Interested to see. Obviously, there's an interdivisional showdown with the Atlanta Falcons taking on the Carolina Panthers.
And man, the Panthers have looked awful early on this year. You know, we'll see if they can kind of get things together, because year two under Coach Canales, they showed some flashes at the end of last season. A little bit similar to what the Seahawks saw from McDaniel, obviously, or McDonald. I get those two confused all the freaking time.
It's tough, right?
Yeah, no. But anyways, as far as the Panthers go, they have not really been that competitive in their first two games. So the Falcons really had a great Monday Night Football performance against the Minnesota Vikings this past week in primetime.
Impressive road win, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I know the Vikings with J.J. McCarthy, there's some growing pains there. But
and now Carson Wentz.
They still looked really, really good in that matchup. And now they hit the road to face Carolina. And then, as you had mentioned, the Buccaneers also in action hosting the Jets and a backup quarterback for the New York Jets, unfortunately. The Buccaneers, man, they've been the bane of my existence in pick six. We've picked them twice, And the first week was that game against the Falcons where I had read this stat about home underdogs in week one in divisional games. They're really good against the spread. They're even good outright. And I'm like, okay, I'll take the Falcons. And then Younghoe Koo, who is no longer on the Falcons, misses that kick. And then week two, the Buccaneers, it's like they got a horseshoe up their behind. You know what I mean? Like, they're just lucky. They're being able to pull out these wins with Baker Mayfield. You know, in a tight game, you kind of trust him to be able to do it. And they did it in week two as well to Houston, putting them to 0-2. So they kind of, I don't want to say they have a cupcake this week with the Jets, but a backup quarterback coming to Tampa Bay. The Buccaneers are looking to extend their kind of early season stretch to 3-0.
You mentioned the Jets have their backup in. Justin Fields is out. Also, Minnesota Vikings have their second stringer in, the Cincinnati Bengals. Not early on. Good luck for some of these starting quarterbacks out there.
Absolutely. But as well, Steve, the game that everybody's going to have their eyes glued to,
also
at least
Commanders
on the noon slate, is the Rams and the Eagles, the rematch from that divisional matchup.
Man, oh, man.
That's a noon start. That feels like it should be a primetime game, shouldn't it? Both teams are off to 2-0 starts. L.A. going to Philadelphia, where...
That game's not going to be even on TV here. I checked the
really?
Guide, my YouTube guide, before leaving the house, and no, we don't get that matchup at noon.
Who's on Fox? Do we not have a Fox start time?
I think the Fox game...
Is the Falcons-Panthers?
I'll have to double check, honestly. There might not be an early Fox game.
Yeah, we'll have to see about that. That would be kind of disappointing, because the Rams and Eagles is...
It seems like a primetime game,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, two of the premium teams in the entire NFC going at it. I think that would be an awesome game to watch. We did that for pick six. So, you know, for our sake and our poor records at the first couple of weeks, we're hoping that the Eagles can kind of pull it out.
Eagles, amazingly, right now, 2-0, considering some of the issues that they've had in games. You look at the numbers from even like a guy like Jalen Hurts, and their passing attack is redunculous that they're 2-0 right now. But, hey, when you got Saquon in that O-line, that kind of helps.
And that defense. I mean, Vic Fangio knows what he's doing. They replaced all these pieces, and they still look really, really good on defense. So, yeah, the Eagles, obviously one of the top teams in the entire NFL, much less the NFC. And the Rams, that's such a fun matchup. I'm disappointed that that's not on cable.
My fantasy team, though, another one there. I'm just waiting for A.J. Brown to show up.
Hey, man, I got Saquon, so keep running the football.
Taking a break here on First Take, an official sports betting partner of the Saints. Caesar Sportsbook First Take, that is. Taking a break. We'll be right back. You can sound off on our WWL talk and text line, 504-260-1870. Be right back after this on WWL. Welcome back into the Caesar Sportsbook First Take, an official sports betting partner of the Saints. Rolling on here, and forgot to mention today, Charlie, we're going to see a new look Saints from the fact that all white uniforms, we got the white helmet, the debut today. Hopefully they bring us a lot more luck than those black helmets have.
Yeah, is it with the color rush?
It is with the color rush,
yeah. That's going to be a clean look.
I've seen some of the photos early on. It looks pretty, pretty sweet.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Looking forward to that. And as well, you know, the Caesar Sportsbook First Take Show, we might as well mention the spread here. Since we've done, you know, the pick six on Thursday, we had it at 7. Seattle was 7-point favorites at home against the Saints. It has now gone up to 7.5.
More money coming in on those Seahawks.
A ton of money has come in on the Seahawks because, you know, we've talked about this before. The difference between 2.5 and 3 and 3.5, or 3 and 3.5, and then the difference between 6.5 and 7 and 7 and 7.5, gigantic in sports betting. So it's the difference between a push or a cover, all that good stuff. 7.5-point favorites for Seattle today. So a lot of money has come in on the Seahawks despite their recent lack of success at home. They think that they get it done. Seattle had a really nice bounce back in week two against Pittsburgh.
But like you mentioned, that was on the road.
It was on the road, exactly. Their week one loss was at home against San Francisco in that divisional matchup. But still, obviously plenty of money is coming in on the Seahawks to cover this game because it's jumped from 7 to 7.5.
Coming up next now, we're going to check in Seattle. Greg Bell, who covers the Seahawks for the Tacoma News Tribune, will join us at 12:20, giving us a little preview and on-the-scenes look at this Seahawks squad coming up. Charlie mentioned that they've got a victory. They're 1-1 on the season, but they've had early, you know, their struggles at home have been notable, which is really surprising. And it's, you know, I'm used to calling it Quest Field. It's now Lumen Field over there.
And one other thing, 1-1, as we mentioned earlier, has them in fourth place in their own division.
Oof.
The NFC West 2-0 49ers, 2-0 Cardinals, 2-0 Rams. That is a brutal, brutal division.
We'll also hear some of Deuce McAllister's keys to the game. Keep it locked right here on First Take on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Who dat? Welcome on into First Take, the Caesars Sportsbook First Take, an official sports betting partner of the Saints. And week three, Charlie, has officially started. Games have gotten underway, those noon starts that we've gotten all so used to. But we're 3:05 today, coming up with Mike Hawes, Deuce McAllister, Jeff Nowak on the sideline at Seattle. So the rest of the NFC South, though, in action. And it turns out our Fox game we have here is the Washington Commanders, led by Marcus Mariota, who gets into the end zone against the Raiders. And so Commanders up 7-0 early at home against the Raiders in this matchup. Really curious to see what happens with them with no Jaden Daniels going forward. I don't know how long it looks like he's going to be out of service.
Hopefully for all NFL fans, it will not be long. Jaden is a special, special talent, and the quicker he gets back onto the field, the better for NFL fans across the world. Steve, this is kind of unusual because it's the afternoon start, but the Saints have six of these right now for this season. They have, obviously, this game, and then they host New England for an afternoon start, which is a little bit interesting. Back-to-back afternoon games at home against Tampa Bay and on the road against Los Angeles, the Rams, in weeks 8 and 9. Then later on in the season, after the bye week, they host Atlanta in the afternoon, week 12. And then week 15, they host Carolina in the afternoon as well. So funny enough, a lot of these afternoon starts are at home, which I think is pretty interesting as well. So we won't be doing this very often together. It will be you and Jeff. But being able to kind of catch up on some of the early action without the Saints playing is something that I'm not very used to. But it's pretty fun. So as you had mentioned early on, the Commanders really hot knife through butter against the Raiders defense. They storm all the way down the field, take a 7-0 lead there. It's one of like almost 10 games that are currently in action right now. And the only other score that we've got so far is the Colts up 7-0 over the Titans.
It's also nice, Charlie, when you have a little bit later start on Sunday, when you have a later night with LSU football, even though you could have tuned out of that game early since it was just a complete blowout of the Tigers all over Southeastern.
Yeah, by the second quarter, you knew what the result was going to be for that game. I am kind of surprised that we're getting the Commanders and the Raiders in this matchup, Steve, for Fox.
No love for Rams-Eagles on Fox. I don't get it either.
I mean, even like my second guess would have been Falcons and Panthers, maybe just because of the NFC
Division,
South
right.
stuff
yeah.
there. But we don't even get that. We don't get the premier matchup with the Rams at the Eagles, which I'm sure is being displayed to the majority of the nation. But we get the Commanders and the Raiders, so it's
thanks, Fox.
It's unique for sure.
Coming up here on WWL Saints Radio will be the Saints at Seattle, 1-1 Seahawks hosting the Black and Gold. Saints color analyst Deuce McAllister up in the Pacific Northwest getting ready for this 3:05 kickoff. Him and Hoss on the call. He was hosting fans in the pros solo with Charlie Long. I guess it wasn't solo then if you were giving them the big assist.
Yeah, we were hanging out. It was a good time.
Here's what Deuce's keys were for this Saints game at Seattle.
Couple things that I think that the Saints have to do well to be successful in this game. One, it's a tough matchup just because of their strength is probably one of your biggest question marks, and that's just because you haven't been great. I think you've been okay. I don't even know if I would give you good up front. I think you've been okay up front. But the strength of Seattle has been their defensive line. And even though you've got new guys on the back end, you may have three new starters. If the Saints are an 11 personnel, they may have three new starters on that back end. The question will be, can you block it up? Can the Saints block it up to be able to exploit the back end of the defense? And so I looked at it a couple of different ways. You can say, hey, I'm going to go heavy personnel, and most of the guys up front, every guy will be double teamed. So you may only be sending three guys out on a route. And if that's the case, you got to get open. But you shouldn't be getting beat because every guy is being doubled. And so you can do it that way, or you can kind of say, okay, I'm going to move the pocket a little bit and give my quarterback 2 to 3 options. When I talk about half to field opportunities, you have to be able to do a little bit of that. And then the other thing that I think that you can do is, when you talk about playing this game kind of a side to side standpoint, is being able to get my guys in space. Yes, you can try to attack them vertically as far as up and down, but I think that if you can make these guys have to tackle in space, particularly if they're backup players. Yes, they've played special teams, but it's a lot different when you talk about I am the starter and I also have to play special teams and I have to go and make a tackle in open space. I think the Saints have to be able to exploit all three of those options, and it's just on offense. Defense, you know, that's a totally different situation. But just from an offensive standpoint, take care of the football and attack those secondary guys in space, whether that's moving the pocket, whether that's the big play element of taking some shot plays down the field. But you've got to make them make plays in one-on-one situations.
Saints color analyst Deuce McAllister there breaking down some of the keys for the game for the black and gold in this matchup at Seattle. And for me, Charlie, he was being awfully kind in his comments about the O-line early on.
Yeah, we'll be talking with Greg Bell here in just a second, Steve. But Deuce brings up a great point about the offensive front against Seattle's defensive front for the Saints. It's a mismatch.
Biggest concern for me.
For Seattle. What you've seen from them, regardless of if it was the week one loss to San Francisco or the week two victory over Pittsburgh, they have gotten after it up front. You know, Byron Murphy, the former 16th overall pick of last year's draft, the 2024 draft, kind of had maybe a quiet rookie season. He started to come along like the entire defense did for Seattle in the second half of the season, and then he's gotten off to an awesome start for Seattle this year, where, you know, maybe he wasn't necessarily in the stat sheet as far as sacks go in week one, but then week two, you know, Mike Dettillier brought this up, like, basically last Monday after the game against Pittsburgh on Sunday, that he was getting double teamed all the time on the interior, and he was still getting after the passer. He had 1.5 sacks in that game and 5 tackles from basically the nose tackle position. He was awesome for
huge
them.
Concern up there.
Yeah, and then Leonard Williams is another guy that he's been beast, around the right. block, right? He's a former first-round pick as well, if my memory serves correct, but he's been in the NFL for quite some time. That was someone that, you know, one of the Sunday reports I had done, Mark Schlereth really highlighted as being really big, really agile, really tough to deal with on the offensive line for a defensive perspective as well. So, you know, those two guys specifically, because the Seattle plays a 3-4 just like the Saints play a 3-4 under Coach Staley, but their edge play isn't necessarily the strength. It's more of those interior guys like the Leonard Williams, like the Byron Murphy, that can really, really get after you and kind of wreck your game plan right from the interior.
So I'm looking at the two guys next to Eric McCoy. You better step it up, whoever's in there. We know Cesar Ruiz and most likely Trevor Penning.
It's going to be a test for those guys right off the bat because you are playing some premier interior defensive linemen this week, and you know, we'll see what ends up happening. I know Ruiz has caught a ton of criticism, rightfully so, for his play early on, and really it started in the preseason, Steve. Like, yeah. He didn't look good in the preseason, and you were thinking, oh well, you know, once you get to the regular season, you're playing next to McCoy, hopefully that will be better for him, and
not
it really
so much.
Has not been. The PFF numbers absolutely hate Cesar Ruiz and what he's done this year. So if you're talking about players that need to step up, because he's been paid by the Saints, you have him on your interior offensive line.
We talk about all the time, a first-round pick.
You need to play like it, and he really hasn't so far this year. So it's not going to get easier against the Seahawks defensive front, but you still need to see some improvement from him because, really, there's nowhere to go but up.
We'll get more on this Seattle Seahawks squad after the break. Greg Bell from the Tacoma News Tribune joining us here on the WWL Caesar Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the Saints. Breaking right now. We'll be right back with more, though, right after this. Who dat? Back here on the Caesar Sportsbook, First Take, an official sports betting partner of the Saints. Checking out real quick the scoreboard around the NFL right now as we have those noon games going on. The Philadelphia Eagles have a 7-0 lead over the Rams. Browns and Packers are scoreless at 0-0. The Colts have a 7-3 lead over the Titans in Tennessee. Minnesota Vikings hosting the Cincinnati Bengals have a 7-0 lead over them. Pittsburgh Steelers in the New England Patriots house have a 7-0 lead there, and the New York Jets have gotten out to a 3-0 start at Tampa Bay. The Washington Commanders 7-3 lead over the LA Raiders. Marcus Mariota with a rushing touchdown for them. The Carolina Panthers currently up 7-0 over the Atlanta Falcons early on, and Jacksonville Jaguars and the Houston Texans off to a 0-0 start. Now we're going to check in Seattle, who covers the Seahawks for the Tacoma News Tribune. Greg Bell, thank you for giving us some time today on this pregame. How you doing, Greg, and what's it like out there right now?
Good morning for us. I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. It's light rain, first rain Seattle's had in a couple months, actually.
Shocker, right?
It hasn't rained a long time here, but it's going to be a light rain, 60-degree type of day, more like an October-November game for Seattle. I don't think the weather will be a huge factor. It's not windy, it's not cold, and it's not heavy rain.
Greg, when you look at this Seattle home team, you know, at home today, we've heard so much. Obviously, the Lumen Field crowd, the 12th man is a big to-do. But as of late, Seattle hasn't been as successful at home.
It's crazy that they've lost 7 of their last 8 home games dating to last season. And, I mean, that's some of the worst teams in the league don't go 7 and losing 7 of 8 at home. They've lost as a 7.5-point favorite as they are today. They lost last year to the Giants in the same situation in early October. They lost again to the 49ers, as they have often in the last half dozen years, to begin this season at home. They spent a lot of time, Mike McDonald, the second-year coach, spent a lot of time talking about fast starts in home games, yet they tend to play behind. They fall behind early. They chase games. You guys know a little bit about Clint Kubiak from last year's Saints team. His offenses are not built to chase games. They're built to take a lead and then wear down a defense with the running game, play action passes off of that. And often in home games, they have fallen behind early and gotten out of what they want to do. Greg, so that's the key for them today. Start fast.
Greg, what can you tell us about Mike McDonald? Because it felt like last year, Seattle gets off to the slow start, but then they really picked it up in the second half of the season. And a lot of that is because the defense really kind of got established there. We know how brilliant he is as a defensive mind. We also saw what he did in Baltimore. But kind of building that defense from the ground up here in Seattle, and then, you know, the good start that they've been off to this year as well defensively, it just feels like he's really kind of earned that reputation as a great young defensive mind.
They hired him to fix the defense. That was what got Pete Carroll fired. The defense was broken. It was bottom of the league, stopping the run, giving up tons of points. And now they've allowed 17 points in each of the first two games. That's their fewest points allowed since 2017. The only Seahawks team to allow fewer points in the first two games to begin a season was the 2013 Super Bowl champion Legion of Boom, the number one ranked defense. They brought him here to fix the defense, and he spent all last year doing it. They traded for Ernest Jones in the middle of the season, a quintessential Mike McDonald middle linebacker. When he hits guys, they go to the ground, a general on the field, a real commanding force that transformed them. They've got 2 Pro Bowlers in the back of the defense in the secondary, cornerback Devin Witherspoon and Julian Love, both of whom may not play today, probably won't. They're listed as doubtful and didn't practice all week. And I'm pretty sure Kellen Moore and the Saints are going to be targeting that in the secondary because they are mixing and matching there. Alvin Kamara, guys, has really given the Seahawks fit in the passing game. In 3 games against Seattle, Kamara's had 9 targets out of the backfield in the pass game. And as you guys know, it's not just swing passes and checkdowns. He'll go out in primary routes. The Seahawks spent a lot of time this week working on Kamara out of the backfield and tackling after the catch, which they were poor at doing in Pittsburgh. But he spent all last year, McDonald did, fixing the defense. He spent this year fixing the offense, bringing in Clint Kubiak and John Benton from the Saints staff. Andrew Janocco is the new quarterback's coach from New Orleans. And their primary mission is to run the ball and run the ball and run the ball some more with the outside zone. So far, mixed results. Kenneth Walker's nursing a foot injury. They're maintaining him, limiting his reps and carries. He had a 100-yard game against Pittsburgh on only 13 carries last week. Zach Charbonnet has been actually the number one back in terms of reps so far, but he's doubtful to play today with a toe injury, which means George Helani, a second-year running back, will come in to be behind and maybe get a lot of reps for Spelling Walker and his foot issue. This team's a little bit beat up. You're catching them for this early in the season. The Seahawks have a lot of key starters out today.
Greg, you mentioned, you know, being beat up. But an issue for me, the biggest scare I have is, you know, looking at the Saints going into this game, the interior of the offensive line hasn't been great and has been banged up, too. We might have Trevor Penning back in the mix today. But for the fact of going against Seattle's D-line, man, oh, man, I feel like they're one of the biggest strengths of that Seattle squad.
Yeah, the defensive line has had a great start. You're right about that. Leonard Williams, Jaron Reed, Byron Murphy. They got DeMarcus Lawrence in from 11 years at the Cowboys at defensive end. They rushed just 4 last week against Aaron Rodgers and still had the highest pressure rate in the league last week. They have the highest pressure rate in the league over the season right now at using 4 down linemen 83% of the time. they haven't blitzed a lot. They usually would send Devin Witherspoon on nickel blitzes, but now he's missed. Today would be the second game he's missed. They played more coverage, but if they're getting the pressure again today on Spencer Rattler with just four down linemen, that's seven to cover, and that's how the Seahawks have held teams with 17 points so far this season.
And then move into the offense for Seattle. I just wanted to, before we get into Darnold and the new look offensive line, which is very young for Seattle, I wanted to ask you about JSN because I know that he was dealing with some flu issues yesterday or symptoms of that, but apparently he's going to be good to go. I was reading reports that he's going to actually play after being listed as questionable kind of late in the process. Jaxon Smith-Njigba, you know, maybe not necessarily a household name, but someone that kind of had his breakout year last season in his second season with Seattle. We always talk about receivers making the year three leap, right? The best receivers, a lot of the times you'll see them get off to a decent start to their NFL careers, but by year three, they've really established themselves as elite players. And so far, so good for JSN, who's got 17 catches in the first 2 weeks, which is third in the NFL, second in the NFL with 227 yards. Once again, he had a really strong 2024 campaign where he, in 17 games, caught 100 balls for over 1,100 yards, but it feels like he's kind of primed for a massive season with Sam Darnold in this offense.
Well, he's a household name if you're from Big Ten country in Columbus, Ohio.
That's true.
He tore up the Rose Bowl his junior year, 347 yards on 15 catches and three touchdowns. That game got him drafted, and he was a first-round pick of Seattle 2 years ago, one of two first-round picks they had along with Devin Witherspoon. 100-catch season, you mentioned, tied Tyler Lockett's team record out here for a season. This season so far, the distribution of the passes have been skewed toward Smith-Njigba. He had 13 targets on only 23 pass attempts in the opener from Sam Darnold, the new quarterback out here. And for the season, he's second in the league with 41% of his team's targets going to him. He's second in the league in receptions, second in yards. I think that's going to flatten out. Cooper Kupp emerged in the second half last week at Pittsburgh on the third down. In the slot as he was so many years for the Saints. They're going to get Elijah Arroyo, their second-round rookie tight end, more involved. Torrey Horton had been beset by an ankle injury at the end of the preseason. He's just now getting back to full strength, their fifth-round wide receiver, rookie from Colorado State, who actually beat out somebody you're a little familiar with, Marquez Valdez-Scantling.
Oh, yeah.
For the job. They end up cutting Scantling because of how good Torrey Horton, the rookie, was. You'll see Horton 15 today in the offense quite a bit. I don't expect them to target Smith-Njigba as heavily as they have the first two games throughout the season, but, yeah, he's become a trusted guy, a first-down guy, who a little bit like Tyler Lockett in that sense of being trusted by his quarterback to get the first downs and third down. But you'll see Kupp in the slot. You'll see them move Smith-Njigba around a lot more than he was last year when Lockett and Metcalf were here. And you'll see Torrey Horton, 15 today, being something of the DK Metcalf old X receiver role. Not that he's a Metcalf guy at all physically, but more of the down-the-field speed deep threat today.
So when you look at this game, Greg, and you know the keys to a victory for Seattle, who do you think could be one of those game wreckers for the Seahawks in this matchup against the Black and Gold?
Well, I would look at Elijah Arroyo, number 18, the rookie tight end. They haven't gotten him really involved yet in the pass game, but he's a pass-catching wide receiver first. He hasn't played as many snaps because his run blocking is still coming along. But in passing situations, he hasn't yet been a factor. I think he'll be. Maybe today's the day for that. And then Kenneth Walker, he got a full load of reps this week because Charbonnet wasn't practicing. This could be a bigger tote day than the 13 carries last week in Pittsburgh for Walker. And defensively, they have to, and you hear this all the time when people play the Saints, even though Alvin Kamara is 30 years old, you got to stop him first and see if they put the game in Rattler's hands in his fourth road start. That's the Seahawks' task, to shut down the run, third down and long situations so that their pass rush that's had such success in the front four gets after him. But look for Elijah Arroyo, somebody nobody's talking about, a rookie tight end number 18 to maybe have a bigger game than his first two.
You know, Greg, I wanted to ask you about the early returns on Sam Darnold, you know, coming over from Minnesota and the fantastic season that he had with the Vikings earned him a big payday with the Seahawks, who let Geno Smith go to Vegas. We got the Raiders game on TV here in the studio right now. But just want to get your kind of early returns from Darnold, his comfort level in that Seahawks offense with Clint Kubiak, and what you've seen from him in the first 2 weeks.
Well, he's had three turnovers in two games. He had a crushing fumble where Nick Bosa pushed his right tackle into him with 30 seconds left, and they were in the red zone down by four against the 49ers in the opener, and Darnold didn't secure the ball, lost it, turnover, game over. And then two really ugly interceptions in the first half in Pittsburgh. One of a ball a high school passer shouldn't throw with a corner underneath coverage on Smith and Jigba down the field. And yet they love how steady he is. They really impressed. The Seahawks players and coaches are both remarking about he's so the same, whether it's he's down 14-7 because of his two interceptions at the half at Pittsburgh, if he's trying to lead a two-minute drive to beat San Francisco, playing from the front with a huge third down pass in the second half in Pittsburgh, but he's always the same. They like his poise, his leadership in those moments. He's got to quit the turnovers he's got to cut down on, obviously, but they haven't seen him operate in the full Kubiak offense yet. They haven't established the run and been in third and short situations to run the full arsenal of playbook that they hired Sam, they signed Sam Darnold for. But so far, inconclusively on the turnover situation, but other than that, they love the other intangibles he's bringing. They want to see him in the full offense if they can get the run game going on first and second down.
And then, Greg, my last one for you. I want to ask you about the offensive line for Seattle, which was, I mean, well, reportedly a nightmare last year for the Seahawks squad, and especially on the interior. They go out and get Gray Zabel, who shined at the Senior Bowl down here in Mobile, and they pick him with the 18th overall selection in the first round. We've talked to different Seahawks reporters throughout the week kind of previewing the game, and the one thing that keeps coming up with someone like Zabel is just, like, such a steady presence. He's like a veteran, even though he's a rookie, and just kind of how he's helped that offensive line go from what it was last year, where it was just a complete mess, to more kind of maybe stable this year is a good word for it. Just want to get your thoughts on Zabel and then that Seahawks offensive front.
Well, the offensive line's been a mess out here ever since they traded Max Unger to the Saints back in 2015 for Jimmy Graham. I mean, seriously, you can point at that. And ever since then, their offensive line's been in shambles. They've had 10 different centers in 10 years since they traded Max Unger. They have not, guys, spent a first-round pick on a guard like they did Gray Zabel this year. They hadn't done that since 2001 Steve Hutchinson. But that worked out all right for them. That's how much of an investment they made on the interior line. Anthony Bradford, an LSU guy a couple years ago, fifth-round pick, is the right tackle starting, and he was injured last year and only got a few starts last season. He's now more solidified at right guard. And they have Jalen Sundell, who was an undrafted rookie last year, is now the starting center. He was actually Gray Zabel's college roommate at North Dakota State for 3 years. They started next to each other at North Dakota State. Now they're starting next to each other here in Seattle. Zabel, presence-wise and effectiveness-wise, is like a seven-year vet. He blocks second- and third-level guys. He's pinning Max Crosby's and Nick Bosa's in his first couple starts. He looks like he's 28, 30 years old already. And well worth it, spending that pick on him. They think they have two bookend tackles in Charles Cross and Abe Lucas. They just extended Lucas for 3 years. They've got Cross on a fifth-year option next year at least, and they're trying to work on an extension for him. They're miles ahead of where they were just a couple years ago. They had Laken Tomlinson starting for them at left guard last year. That's where they were. And so they're way ahead. And they're still getting into the outside zone scheme, blocking scheme that Benton and Kubiak are coaching. But Gray Zabel alone has upgraded them. And it's because they finally invested in that interior of the line that they were reluctant to do for so long.
Greg Bell covers the Seahawks for the Tacoma News Tribune. Thank you so much for the time. I hope you have a great game day. I know there's plenty of coffee at the stadium awaiting.
Not hard to come by coffee here. It's kind of like rain. It's always falling on you.
Awesome stuff. Thanks again, Greg.
Enjoy the game. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it. Check out Greg on X, Greg G Bell Seattle, at G Bell Seattle. You can follow him there. And, yeah, that was one thing I was amazed. My one trip to Seattle, as I mentioned earlier, Charlie, it just seemed from everywhere in the media area, including in the broadcast booth, they were just bringing you, you know, coffee. And I was like, oh, you know, caffeine, fuel me. Give me that nitro.
Now, I've never been to Seattle, but that's kind of funny. You know, hopefully, like, the Saints defensive line can drink some of that and get ready for this matchup because, yes, the Seahawks offensive line, as Greg mentioned, is better, but that's still an area that the Saints defensive front needs to win in this game because if you can slow down the rushing attack with Kenneth Walker, who, as Greg has mentioned, is a little bit hobbled with a foot issue, and Zach Charbonnet, who once again
doubtful.
RB1B for them, is not likely going to be playing in this game. He's doubtful, as we mentioned. He's not 100% out, but typically when you're doubtful, you're not going to play. So Kenneth Walker is already a little bit banged up, but he's going to be the guy in the running back room today for Seattle. If you can slow him down and then force Sam Darnold into these obvious drop back passing situations where he can't utilize play action and you can get after him as a passer, you have a shot here for the Saints defense to have a really good day. But you got to battle that Seahawks offensive line, which is much improved from last year. But it's still a potential exploitable unit.
I think we talk about, you know, winning in the trenches. Obviously, every week is so important throughout the NFL. But, man, oh, man, there's things that you want to see this Saints squad be able to do this week that's going to be mighty difficult against a Seattle squad. I feel like there's not a great matchup in the trenches either side.
No, not necessarily. Once again, the one you feel a little bit better about is the Saints' defensive front against Seattle's offensive line.
Agreed, right.
Where they're both kind of middle of the pack units. I know the Saints defensive front is kind of in the bottom of the NFL right now in pressures. They need to get back up towards at least the middle, and hopefully they can do that today. The one that you're really concerned about is kind of what Greg had mentioned there, that Seattle's defensive line has been maybe the strength of their team going against the Saints offensive line, which has not played well in the first 2 weeks of the season.
Well, we know we've seen Spencer Rattler have that scramble ability. He might be on the run kind of often today. And hey, maybe if he scrambles out, the wide receivers get open down the field. We know that the secondary has injury issues there, can take advantage of that. Just hoping, we heard Drew Brees in those comments, you just need to break the seal right now. And I think it's been since December 8th of last year when they took on the Giants since we've seen the Saints organization get a win altogether. It's been a while.
And you just want Rattler to get that first W.
Even in preseason, we saw a tie, but we didn't get a win.
Yeah, I know, but even that's the thing that people keep banging Rattler on is that he hasn't picked up an NFL win yet. And despite how hard he's been playing, despite how hard he's been working, you just want to see him get that W. And we'll see if he can do it today.
Taking a break here on our WWL Caesars Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the Saints. We shall return even more with our pregame coverage leading into the Bud Light Countdown, the kickoff coming up at 1. Stay tuned right after this on WWL.
Obviously, you know, it's one of the loudest stadiums in the league. What an opportunity, what a challenge for us to go in there and try to get our first win of the year. Obviously, it's going to be really loud. We got to be poised in the noise. That's our message this week, and be great with our communication, getting in and out the huddle, and, you know, just trying to focus in on our job, even with all the extra stuff going on.
Saints quarterback Spencer Rattler there talking about being poised in the noise at Lumen Field in Seattle. And like I mentioned earlier, Charlie, for me, a little strange calling it Lumen Field. I'm used to being Quest.
What's really strange is how bad the Seahawks have been at home. Like, we've brought it up multiple times throughout the show, but just kind of emphasizing it. Like,
you hear about this 12th man.
Like, it's one of the most iconic kind of titles for a fan base in the entire NFL. And they fly the flag and they get everyone excited. And it's one of the loudest venues in all the National Football League. Like Drew put it perfectly when he said that back in 2013 when they had to go to Seattle twice, once in the regular season and then again in the playoffs, that how they just could not hear anything because of how loud it was, how passionate that fan base is. They just haven't been putting up wins in front of those fans. It's been strange because they've been winning football games. Like, this isn't a bad Seahawks team by any stretch of the imagination. They just haven't won at home.
Well, hopefully another soggy day in Seattle kind of helps quell the fan base out there. Maybe the Saints can rise to the occasion and get that victory. As Drew also said, break that seal. And because we know next week is a heck of a task traveling to Buffalo.
Yeah, absolutely. Greg brought it up, though, in our recent interview, Steve. It's 7 of their last 8 games at home they've lost.
You would never guess that, I don't feel like.
They've played good teams, like Minnesota and Green Bay last year were good teams. They lost
tough division, too.
Buffalo, the Rams, they lost an overtime game at home. San Francisco, they've lost back-to-back games against the 49ers at home. But then they lost to, like, the Giants last year, which is a little bit peculiar at home. And the one game that they've won in their past 8 was, like you said, a divisional game, Arizona. So it's a strange, strange thing that's been happening in Seattle recently, and hopefully that trend continues.
We're looking at the NFL scoreboard right now, checking in on some games. Carolina Panthers up 7-0 over Atlanta. Green Bay Packers up on Cleveland 3-0. It's Jacksonville 7 over Houston, who has 0. The Minnesota Vikings 14-0 over the Cincinnati Bengals. Pittsburgh also has a 14-0 lead at New England. The Rams just got on top of the Philadelphia Eagles over there, 10-7. The Buccaneers are on the board, but trailing the New York Jets 6-3. Indianapolis Colts have a 17-3 lead over the Titans in Tennessee. And in Washington, it's Commanders 7, Las Vegas Raiders 3. Really surprised to see a team like the Bengals, I guess, struggling that much, you know, on the road against Minnesota. I get the Vikings have a pretty good defense there. But man, oh man, I guess you have both backup QB situations with the Vikings and Bengals right now.
It's really sad, Burrow situation with the turf toe injury that requires surgery. He's going to be out for 3 months, Steve. The Bengals season at that point, like,
you feel doomed.
You're off to a 2-0 start, which is the good thing because they've been terrible in weeks 1 and 2 under Zach Taylor, but they've been winning these games even though they haven't looked very good. Is their season over despite a 2-0 start?
Sadly, it feels that way with Joe.
So we'll see what happens there. And then also, as you mentioned, well, now Tampa Bay just scored. They had it first and goal. So the Buccaneers currently lead the Jets 10-6. You know, Tyrod Taylor, the backup quarterback for the Jets, actually got off to a good start there. And we'll see plenty of backup QBs throughout the season. I mean, that's something that people don't really realize is that the average for the amount of quarterbacks a team plays per season is like over 2 right now. Because of all the injuries that are happening to quarterbacks around the NFL. We're in week 3 right now. We're seeing all these backups get playing time already. So you can expect that trend to continue.
Little fun tidbit in that Tampa Bay Jets game. You mentioned Tyrod Taylor at quarterback for the Jets. He was with the Cleveland Browns the year that Baker Mayfield got drafted in the first round.
Oh.
So they had a little bit of a history. Baker talked highly of him going into this game.
And then one of those games that we'll be keeping an eye on throughout the first slate of games is the Falcons and the Panthers.
Yeah.
Carolina is still up 7-0 in Carolina over the Falcons. And Atlanta's gone off to kind of a slow start here. And we'll see if Carolina, who has really been terrible in their first two games, can pick up maybe a surprise upset victory.
Taking a break here on the Caesar Sportsbook First Take. Caesar Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the Saints. Be back with more right after this. Stay tuned on WWL. Welcome back into the Caesar Sportsbook First Take, an official sports betting partner of the Saints as we get ready for the Bud Light Countdown, the kickoff coming up with the Cajun Cannon at 1 o'clock here. Wanted to get into some of our remaining audio before we sign off here on First Take. Coach Kellen Moore talking about this matchup against 1-1 Seattle. We know that Seahawks D is frightening, and here's what Kellen Moore had to say.
I have a ton of respect for Mike, going all the way back to Baltimore. We played him a couple times when he was there, and so they're really, really sound. They're really sound. They're all tied together. They don't give you – you don't see a bunch of freebies in games. You don't see blown coverages, miss run fits, and turn into explosives. You're going to earn everything. And he has a really good ability and balance of playing the patience game and then finding those really opportune times to pressure you. And so, it's a really talented group. When you look at really this whole entire group – is the same as what they had last year, and then they added some really good pieces like a DeMarcus Lawrence and some of those guys. And so, it's a really talented group.
That's head coach Kellen Moore talking about the Seahawks defense. Meanwhile, on the other side of the ball, Sam Darnold, his first season in Seattle. What's Kellen Moore seen out of the QB?
I think Sam's just a great example of the development of quarterbacks in our league, and sometimes it takes a little bit of time and being in the right situation and right environment. I thought what he did last year at Minnesota was really special. He carried a team and put them in an awesome position to make a playoff run and have tons of success up there. And so, I feel like he's in a great situation. I thought he played some really good football last week against Pittsburgh. He's a really good quarterback in this league. He's earned it, and so it'll be a challenge for us.
And one thing, Charlie, if this game comes down to a field goal, how confident we feeling in Blake Groupie right now? Well, head coach Kellen Moore still has a ton of confidence in the Saints kicker.
It'll be fine. There's too much good over the course of the sample size I've experienced with him to say have a bunch of concerns. He's had an awesome training camp, offseason, preseason. He's made some really good kicks. He kept us in it, certainly in the Arizona game when we kept kicking field goals. And so, we missed a couple ops. We'll get better from it. He's going to be just fine, and I have all the confidence in the world in him.
Groupie's definitely a bit head-scratcher to start the year because, we raved so much about him, how he was performing in training camp, and I definitely was recommending, you got to get this guy in fantasy football.
Yeah, and, they asked him about it during the Saints coaches show on Monday, and he said he still has all the faith in the world in Blake Groupie. He just needs to go out there and start making those intermediate kicks because those have been the ones that he's been missing. But real quick, as we're heading out here, Steve, yeah. There was a stat that I used from Dalton Wasserman, who from PFF, that we interviewed about Sam Darnold, who Coach Kellen Moore just talked about there, that when he's allowed to utilize play action as a passer, he's top five in the NFL as far as those PFF metrics go. But when he's having to do those true dropback sets where he's having to throw on third and long and stuff like that, and you know what they're doing, much more middle of the pack. So stop the run and get after him in those true dropback sets.
Thanks for tuning in to the Caesar Sportsbook First Take. That's Charlie Long. Also, thanks from Coleman. I'm Steve Geller. That's a wrap. We're getting into now the Bud Light Countdown to Kickoff coming up next right up on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.